both far and wide as Run Ball. For all to hear, his voice is strong, his message clear. The powers that be are terrified, afraid he'll up and spoil their plans. The people will finally understand, their mamas ought to tan their hides. Run, Paul, let's stand tall. Country doctor, he got his start helping folks with his healing art.
Well, that was Tom Staley with Stand Tall for Ron Paul. And I'm Stephen Vincent, host of the Freedom Message. I'm not feeling very well today. Had a serious bacteriological infection, which is getting better, but I'm not quite over it yet, so I'm not up to doing the whole show for you. But what I'm going to do at the top here is play a couple of clips for you, some new things that have come out. First, I'm going to start out with something positive and uplifting. I'm going to start out with a new commercial from the Ron Paul campaign, an official Ron Paul commercial for radio, and I'll play that for you right now. Okay, hold on a second. Get that for you in just a second. Here we go.
Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul is unique. Congressman Ron Paul has a principled, consistent voting record that is not dictated by special interests in Washington. Ron Paul has stood resolute against our government's interference overseas, in our economy, and in our personal lives. Ron Paul is the champion of the Constitution. Ron Paul's candidacy is hope for America. Be a part of it. Join us. Thousands already have. Ron Paul has received more donations from men and women in the military than any other candidate. Don't believe the cynical lie that we can't fight the big money that funds politics as usual. People of every age, race, and background, united by a message of freedom, peace, and prosperity, are ready to take this country back. Learn more at RonPaul2008.com. That's RonPaul2008.com. RonPaul2008.com.
This is Ron Paul, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by RonPaul2008, BC's.
I have to say, I like that a lot, and I think it might be my favorite advertisement for Ron Paul, whether video or audio thus far. I'd have to look back and see what other material there is, but it really grabs me right off the bat. I like, there's a strength to it. I like the theme of take the country back, because I think a lot of people are really feeling that really deep down, and so there's a lot that I like there in that clip. Now, there's a lot that I'm not going to like, and if you're at all a fan of Ron Paul, you're not going to like in the... Okay, as Ron Paul supporters, we are basically accused of being terrorists in this clip. So, the theme of the Guy Fawkes and the V character connected to the November 5th fundraising drive rears its ugly head once again. I certainly predicted that this would happen, and it's not the last we're going to hear of it. They are going to use this over and over and over again. So please, folks, let's go ahead and use better judgment in the images that we link Ron Paul and the campaign to. Now, I know we all want a revolution, and we are having a revolution right now. That is actually what's transpiring right now. There's simply no question about that. But, you know, ours is the love-olution, right? Ours is a peaceful revolution of the ballot box. Okay, we're going to take this country back, but we're going to do it without destroying the country. So, you know, we just have to be more responsible and really think about the implications. Think about the implications for Ron Paul and how he spent November 6th all day long defending himself from interviewer after interviewer after interviewer on the issue of Guy Fawkes, the money bombs, and terrorism, you know, and the link to that. And he had to waste his time defending that. It really detracted from the success of that day and continues to do so. I have to say I'm very pleased with the new theme, the Boston Tea Party. And in fact, I'm going to be proposing something that I hope everyone will be able to get behind, and I'll bring that out for you tomorrow. I'll have that ready for you tomorrow related to that theme. So let me go ahead and play this clip from Glenn Beck for you, and prepare to be enraged, I should say.
While our foreign enemies are the obvious ones, the physical threat may be developing domestically as well. And here's how I got there. As I told you last week, Ron Paul raised over $4 million in one day. That's huge news. His supporters raised the cash on November the 5th to commemorate Guy Fawkes. This guy was a British terrorist who tried to overthrow the government by blowing up Parliament and killing everybody in it. Paul's supporters called the donations, and I'm quoting, a money bomb. Fox was caught the very last minute, some say with his hand on a torch about to light the gunpowder under Parliament. Now, the vast majority of Paul's supporters take this little metaphor the way it's intended, as a rallying cry to create a dramatic political shift. It's really not the way I would go, you know, tying my movement in with a historical terrorist attack, especially in post 9/11 America. But hey, you know, I'm a libertarian at heart. I get it. You raise money however in post 9/11 America. But hey, you know, stop. But America, here's what you need to know tonight. Ron Paul's supporters are tapping in to something that's very real. It's something that I've talked about on this program for a very long time. The rising tide of disenfranchisement in this country. And it's coming from all sides of the political spectrum. If that feeling of disenfranchisement leads to political discussion, then our system works perfectly. But if fringe elements take that disenfranchisement and turn it into violence, we endanger the freedoms we're supposedly all fighting for. David Horowitz is the author of Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom, and Jonathan Sands. He is a writer and founder of Churchill's Britain. He is also the great-grandson of Sir Winston Churchill. Jonathan and David, it's good to have you here. Jonathan, let me start with you. Guy Hawks, or Fox, as I understand it, he is basically an old-timey Timothy McVeigh.
Sorry, say that again.
He is England's version in the 1600s of Timothy McVeigh, except his bomb didn't work. He's a terrorist,
yes.
Is he not?
Yes, he was a terrorist, very much so. He had a very clear set of views. He was a Catholic and wanted to return Britain to a Catholic realm. And he was backed by the Pope in Rome to blow up Parliament, blow up James I and his government,
okay,
and overthrow and then have a Catholic king reinstated.
All right. Now, one of his big things, and I think this is where it ties into today, one of his big things was he felt that nobody was listening to him, that the government wouldn't respond. We felt that way, and that's why we disbanded from from Great Britain in the 1700s as well, because we felt like the king wasn't listening to us. Do you sense at all that this is the same kind of thing that is going on in Great Britain and in America right now?
Yes, this is a problem that we are facing at the moment in Great Britain, certainly, and also in America. We have governments that are promising an awful lot of things for the voters, but they aren't delivering on them. But nobody is actually asking the people, what do you actually want? What is it in education that you want? What is it in life that you actually want? Nobody cares.
Well, David, let me go to you, because you were a Marxist in the 60s. You were a radical. You were a guy that was exactly the opposite of where you are now. Winston Churchill, I believe, said that, you know, when you grow up, you need to get some common sense. Is this the same kind of thing, or is this worse than what it was in the 60s with the radicals then?
No, I think it's much worse. So first of all, my parents were communists, and they were part of a vast conspiracy that was orchestrated from Moscow and wanted America to lose the Cold War. We have a lot of people in this country who think that we're the enemy. And a lot of them are drawn from the ranks of the old left and the new left, the secular left. But to them has been added a whole new constituency of Muslim radicals, of which there are many in this country and in our campuses. And then the Democratic Party leaders, out of a very short-sighted desire for political advantage, have defected from a war that they all supported, and have denigrated the mission of this war and fueled the fires you call disenfranchisement.
Let me take it back the other way, though, David. It's not just the left this time. It's also the right. I mean, Ron Paul supporters are also the right, and that's from people saying, you know what, Bush has really not told us the truth, not told the American people the truth on government spending, on the border, and even when it comes to the war, you didn't tell us that we are in the fight of our life. You told us to go shopping.
Well, but he did say it's going to be a long war. You're right. There's a strain of isolationism and anarchy in the American tradition, which Ron Paul is tapping into. I think it's very significant that he chose Guy Fawkes as an image. There are plenty of, unfortunately, libertarian websites which are indistinguishable from the anti-American left these days.
Yes.
LouRockwell.com and others like that. They are totally in bed with the Islamo-fascists and have turned against this country.
Jonathan, I met you, I think a couple of weeks ago, and we had a conversation. You are as concerned about your country as we are here in America on ours. You're seeing that it's being sold out as well. That it's there's something beneath the surface that is just washing everything away.
Glenn, we have had an agreement in this country for many years now that if our allies in America go to war, that we will join you in that battle. I believe David is completely right in what he is saying, that when George Bush stood up and actually said that we were going to go to war against terrorists, and when Tony Blair stood up and said the same thing, both our countries, both our peoples and our governments were behind it, were behind those two leaders. In this country at the moment, we are now looking at a backlash where everybody is saying, oh, we've got to get out of Iraq now, and we can't look at Iran and everything like that. There's a total loss of once you've begun something, you've got to stop it.
Jonathan,
Once you've begun something, you've got to stop it.
Jonathan, thank you very much. David, I'd love to have you on the radio program and talk about your history with your family and what that
Absolutely.
Was. So maybe we'll line that up. Okay, where am I wrong? The Ron Paul Revolution. I think it's been...
Good. So there was the piece with Glenn Beck basically accusing Ron Paul and his followers of being terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. And so it begins. Now, we need to keep in mind that there is a bill before Congress entitled the Homegrown Terrorism and Violent Radicalization Prevention Act. The Homegrown Terrorism and Violent Radicalization Prevention Act. And that bill is making its way through the Senate right now. It flew through the House of Representatives, 404-6, and it aims to label entire groups of people as either terrorists or potential terrorists. So we do need to be wise in our choice of words and images that we use as we go forward with this project of the Ron Paul Revolution. So what I'm going to do for you now is take that into something a little bit more uplifting. The first part of Ron Paul's speech at the Philadelphia rally this weekend, this Saturday, where he drew about 5,000 people. And then after that, we will go to some archive material, interviews with prior guests, and I will be back, hopefully feeling better for you tomorrow, and I will have more of a dissection of this Glenn Beck piece, unless more important news preempts that.
you very much. I think it looks like it's about time we had a new declaration. A strong and firm declaration that we're going to get our country back and we are going to restore our liberties to this country. You know, we can look to my right and we see the grand monument there for our declaration and to our left for our Constitution. And even over here, we look at a mint for the day that we will go back when the mint is minting real money, gold and silver, not that paper. Well, I tell you what, I think you've settled and dispelled all my reservations. Because it has been said that there were 2 or 3 dozen spammers out there running the campaign, and it looks like there's a lot more. Not only have we had this grand crowd, but the crowds have been building. They build on the internet, and it can't just be a few people because they send in a lot of money as well. You know, they tell us that the polls after the debates have all been spammed, that they're not reflecting what the people think. But you know, after a while, they'll come to be believers, and I think this crowd today is going to make a few believers out of those who are reluctant. One of the grandest thing about the crowds that come, this one included, is that we bring people together. You know, the crowds are diverse. Everybody has their own lifestyle. They like to lead their life, and they also like to spend their own money the way they want, too. But you know, the crowds are coming together. You know, even in crowds like this, we will have Republicans here. And of course, there will be a few independents will come. And then there'll be a few individuals who have never been involved in politics and they feel it's about time. And then again, there may just be a few here from the Democratic Party that we welcome. Of course, every once in a while, we have a few anarchists show up as well. So it's great that we can bring together, because I think what happens under the welfare state and socialism, everybody's fighting over a piece of the pie that the government takes from us, and it leads to nothing but division and special interests and powerful lobbyists going to Washington. We stand for exactly the opposite. But I do want to recognize a birthday today. This is a birthday, and this group that I want to recognize, it was founded here just several hundred years ago, like in 1775. And I would like to, after I announce this happy birthday, I want those individuals that it may affect, I want them to stand. But this was the day of birth for the U.S. Marines. Any Marines in the audience? Other organizations in the military stands behind the other organizations in the military stands behind defending this country. The other organizations in the military stands behind defending this country. But we're at a stage now where we have to reassess our foreign policy and not be so careless with sending our troops overseas. I believe sincerely that if we, this country, were ever to be attacked by a foreign function, a foreign source, that every one of us would act like a Marine and defend this country. By a foreign power, because we have weakened ourselves like we are determined to do, and be invaded with a country such as the Chinese, who have a different lifestyle than I in coming to the defense of a reflection of an unwise foreign policy. A reflection of an unwise foreign policy. A reflection of an unwise foreign policy. Those individuals who would come here and do us harm have hatred in their hearts. But let me tell you, they don't hate us because we are free and prosperous. That is not the reason. If we don't understand that, we cannot solve our problem. It was mentioned in introduction about the strong position I hold on declaration of war, which is the Constitution. And there should be no war whatsoever without a proper declaration by the U.S. Congress. And I promise to you one thing for sure, if I am to be the leader and the president, I will never take this country to war without permission and a declaration of war by the U.S. Congress. And a commander-in-chief today, if he were so inclined, has the authority to end the war. We can and should bring our troops home now. About only bringing them home from the Middle East, I'm talking about bringing them home from Korea, Japan, Europe, all over the world. You know, it shouldn't be such a tough decision. Even those who support the intervention in the world, our empire overseas, will have to come and face reality. The reality is that we no longer can afford it, and we need to save the money and bring them home. We are currently now engaged in so many operations overseas. We're in 130 countries. We have 700 bases overseas. We're spending trillions of dollars overseas maintaining this empire. And guess what? We can't even do it without borrowing money from the Chinese. We need to reverse that and stand on our own feet. There is indeed a connection between our foreign policy and our currency. If you study monetary history and you study the history of empires, empires come and go, currencies come and go. Most of the time what happens is a country extends itself too far beyond its borders, whether we're talking about ancient Rome or whenever. They extend themselves too far, and then what do? They abuse the currency because they do not have the courage to tax the people, nor do they have the authority from the people. So what they do is they inflate. They destroy the value of the currency. In the old days, they diluted the metal or clipped the coins. Today, unfortunately, it is done by merely printing money, and this is the reason we have to address this subject, and we cannot get our freedoms back if we do not come down and understand that no longer should we have this Federal Reserve System printing worthless currency.
Of anti-Western.
here, where they civic engagement seems to imply some kind of street level snitch network, you know, of some kind. So.
Yeah, which, again, right out of the pages of history.
Absolutely.
Mussolini pioneered the snitch network. You know, Hitler studied Mussolini and did his own version. Stalin studied Hitler. You know, these German Stasi kept a file on 10% of the population, so everyone thought they were under surveillance. Yeah, I mean, this, they're setting up the informant system that operated in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, that's what
this is.
Yeah, that's what this would appear to be, and it also appears to be merely an icebreaker bill, where this bill basically kind of gets things on the agenda and establishes them firmly on the national agenda, and then I think the real guns open up after that. So this sailed through the House of Representatives. I cannot believe it. 404. To six.
What were they thinking?
Yeah.
Okay, that's horrifying. I love talking about these issues, but I unfortunately have to leave shortly.
Okay, that's fine.
Attend to my children. Is there a sort of a gracious way I can?
Yes, absolutely.
Close my remarks.
Yes, you can summarize by anything that you'd like to say, and just allow me to thank you for coming on to the show, and ask you that hopefully it won't be the last time, and if you'd let me if you'd email me and get me your email address, I'd like to keep you on the mailing list for the show, and keep you in touch with the information that comes up as it comes out. And I can give you my email. It's freedommessage@sbcglobal.net.
Mm-hmm.
Freedommessage@sbcglobal.net. And my website is www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can keep in touch
with
me that way.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah, thank you. I do appreciate that. I'd love to be kept informed. I think that what we really need to do is create an alliance of our various organizations and confront these abusers while we still can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you for, you know, your community's dedication to the Constitution, the rule of law, and especially to be hopeful of, you know, this paradigm shift you mentioned, that we can really unite in support of the vision our founders hoped that we would defend. Thank you so much for the chance to talk to you.
Thank you, and thank you very much for joining us. And you go ahead and go take care of those beautiful children of yours.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Okay, so there we had Naomi Wolf on the line with us, I'm very pleased to have had the opportunity to speak with her. And it's, you know, I know that I personally, I've had my own political journey, you know. I mean, who and what I am today politically is certainly somewhat substantially different from what I have been in the past and what I'm probably likely to be in the future, and that's freedom. The ability to change your mind, think and develop over time, adjust to changing circumstances, you know, this is freedom, you know, and I think it's really, we can't have a demonized kind of point of view. I got an email from somebody who, when I sent out my email announcement about this interview with Naomi Wolf, then it was noted that she was a Rhodes Scholar, and, you know, apparently the Rhodes Scholarship is a sort of part of the globalist network, as it were, and I think that can be somewhat demonstrated. But, you know, people are individual human beings. You know, they may have gone to a particular college, they may have had contact with certain, you know, elements of the establishment, but it doesn't mean that they, as individuals, cannot develop, change, and shift over time. And I'm sure that's what's happening with Naomi Wolf. I know that's what's happening with myself. You know, this is something that we're free to do. And so please approach people with openness of heart and mind and engage them and talk to them. It's just as Ron Paul says, you know, talk to people really and listen. And listen to what they have to say. It's very essential so that we can continue to grow and develop as a society politically in an organic way. Just want to thank you all for listening in and tuning into the show today. There were a whole host of technical glitches that happened today, and I just don't know what to say about it. You know what? This is very cutting-edge technology. This is all new stuff. I'm learning on the fly how to make this work and happen. I'm doing it all on my own, so while I'm trying to present to you news and analysis, I'm also dealing with technical issues, mixing the audio. There's a whole host of things that are happening simultaneously, so I hope that you will bear with me as I learn to make this happen and present an increasingly more cohesive and together show for you as time goes on. I do hope to continue to bring great guests for you, like Naomi Wolf and others in the coming weeks. And I guess a final note, I wanted to talk about the 5th of November. I have not been 100% supportive of this effort to raise money on the 5th of November, only because I just don't feel very comfortable with the choice of that date and the imagery around the V character and the Guy Fawkes character, both of whom are essentially terrorists. And I thought it was a poor choice of judgment to link the Ron Paul campaign, the Ron Paul movement, to those images. And I still do. However, Ron Paul has made two statements today. He spoke at Clemson, and I'm actually going to try to put that video up for you after the show. He spoke at Clemson, and he made a statement about the 5th of November. He actually said, remember the 5th of November, and made a statement about the fact that people will be contributing a large sum of money on that day. And he also, there's another piece of video out on the web right now where he actually mentions it. So let me put it this way. If it's good enough for Ron, it's good enough for me. So I encourage everyone to go ahead, please, and spread the word about the 5th of November and donate on that day at least $100. And let's see if we can make it a real historic day out of it. With any luck, the media won't beat us too viciously over the head with the V and Guy Fawkes images. We will hear about that. Let's put it that way. We're going to get hit with it, so be prepared for it. But hey, what's done is done. Let's go for it, and then go for an even bigger money bomb of $100 the following week. And let's not link it to anything ridiculous like V or Guy Fawkes. Okay, let's just, you know, pick a good, you know, solid, neutral American theme for the next one, please. Please? All right. But good work to the people that put that together. I appreciate your thoughts, your idea behind it. Just a little bit of questionable judgment on the date that you picked and the imagery that you're surrounding the campaign with. Well, this is going to be Stephen Vincent signing off for today, and I'll be back with you on Monday. Let me leave you with something new from Steve Doerr. Almost forgot about it. He has a little piece of video and a little new song he wrote called Don't Be a Sheep. I'm going to go ahead and leave you with that. And Steve Doerr, my good friend, please enjoy this from Mr. Doerr.
Right. I mean, he's right with 95% of what he said. I'm not sure what he means by Iran having no history of attacking their neighbors because of the Iran-Iraq War, which lasted forever. But in a general sense, anyone who, you know, looks at what the cause of anti-Western is understands that it's not that they hate us because we're rich and free. It's that we're, you know, in their view, occupying their countries, subduing their populations, you know, and certainly in Israel and Palestine, you know, in their view, terrorizing women and children, creating an apartheid state. And, I mean, just the fact that most Americans don't know it and don't realize it. It is, he's right, it's dangerous. It's dangerous to ourselves. It's dangerous to our children. One of the horrifying things about the journey I took writing The End of America is that I really thought that America was this benchmark of democracy and spread democracy, and now, you know, from my reading, I've learned that we actually export the blueprint of dictatorship, you know, all over the world and support brutal dictators all over Latin America and in various regimes around the world. And I certainly, and most of us are completely unaware of it because there's a media blackout about it. I certainly now agree with Ron Paul that if we withdrew the imposition of violent, brutal dictators who take the 10 steps that we've identified here at home from around the world, we would not be facing the kind of animosity that exposes us to terror attacks. And, you know, it's changed our lives for the worse in terms of living in fear. We don't need to live in fear if we stop abusing the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And it takes a brave guy to say it.
Yes, especially in the Republican debate when the House is packed with neocon supporters, you know, he's confronted there. He stood very tall and firm in that confrontation with Rudy Giuliani, and did not waver. Certainly, you're right. It takes a brave man to do that, we're very proud to support him for that. And you're right, the blowback issue is something that is real, and we need to look at, you know, what are the roots. Again, he says in that same debate, that's one of the places where he said, you know, why don't we just listen to what our enemies have to say? And you know, and if you listen to them, you'll find that it's blowback, just like our own CIA analyzed. It's blowback for he actually cited in that debate the imposition of the Shah of Iran on Iran by the CIA destabilizing the country and overthrowing Mossadegh back in 1954. And you know, this is real. And right now we're paying the cost of a world empire, trillions and trillions of dollars going down the drain, when our own economy and the welfare of our own citizens is in doubt here. It's certainly not a sustainable policy. Even if one were to determine that it was a desirable policy to have a world empire, which I certainly don't, if one did come to a determination, it's not even a sustainable one. And
you're absolutely right. And more Europeans who visit are saying, "Oh my gosh, what happened to America? The infrastructure is decaying, and people don't have health care, and it's looking more and more like a developing world country." So you're so right. We're exporting these trillions of dollars because it enriches the corporations who are working hand in hand with lobbyists and government, and the people are left begging and you know, working three jobs to get health care. I mean, you know, if Ron Paul could bring those trillions home, you know, that's a great accomplishment. I do want to say one thing that is very shocking that I discovered in my research. You know, right now Mukasey is being grilled on whether, you know, waterboarding is torture, and this administration has really legalized torture. I mean, they say they don't, but they do. It's profit driving that. This horrify people. Per your point that we are inflaming Muslim sensibilities by our actions. If you looked at Guantanamo or Abu Ghraib and you saw the systemic humiliation, you know, practices taken from Stalin's gulag, heat and cold, standing positions, you know, memoirs from the gulag say after 3 days of standing positions they would have signed anything, sexual humiliation, being, you know, packed into boxcars, shipping containers, it's, you know, I could go on and on, you know, and these images are all over the Muslim world, and these stories are all over the Muslim world. You'd almost think it looks like a factory for producing people who hate us. And to my horror, I realized I found the smoking gun. Billions of dollars now depend on the hyping of a quote-unquote global war on terror, because in the wake of the Cold War, the third of the economy that used to make Cold War weapons was facing a declining market share, and they had to find a new enemy. And so by hyping the global war on terror and by basically creating a situation where coerced confessions by brown people with Muslim names are being produced, that's a product of the high market value right now, because billions of dollars, these people went from Cold War weapons into security and surveillance technologies, and they have their own lobbyists who work closely with Homeland Security,
mm-hmm.
and they're helped to write the laws, because now billions can be made by, you know, hyping the war on terror and by turning a surveillance apparatus on a new enemy, which is defined as us.
Absolutely.
Now owe them billions of dollars because we had a consumption binge. We bought and spent it. We did not invest it productively. We have no means of repaying the money that we've borrowed. We're starting to see that now as the dollar is falling apart. It's hitting new records today against the basket of currencies around the world. Gold hit $840 an ounce today. Oil prices hit $98 a barrel. All of this is a direct result of the inflation that the Federal Reserve has been creating. The debasement of our currency, and you know, we've basically borrowed and spent ourselves to financial ruin, and I think we're headed for a severe recession. In fact, I think if the government were honest with us about how bad inflation already is, it would be obvious to more people that the recession has already begun. But it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to last for years, and unfortunately, you know, I think that the economy is going to be in such a shambles come election day that I don't think any Republican other than Ron Paul has a chance of winning. I don't know how good his chances are, but I think he has a better chance than any of the other nominees, who I think will lose to whoever the Democrats put up, because this economy is going to be a mess, and the Democrats are going to be able to blame the mess on the Republicans. Whether they deserve the blame or not, it's going to be very easy to do, and the Republicans are really going to have no way out of this, because they have been pretending that the economy is great. They have been pretending everything is fine, while it's been the Democrats that have been critical of the economy. Maybe they've been critical for the wrong reasons, but at least they've been criticizing it. And there's going to be no way to defend this record when, you know, when we are going to be in the midst of this recession. And I think Ron Paul is the only person running in either party who understands the basic problems, who understands the mess this country is in, and how we got into this mess. He understands money. He understands, you know, the difference between real money and fiat. He understands the dangers of a central bank and what they can do to an economy, what they've done to this economy. And also, he understands, you know, the Constitution. He understands what the proper role of government is. And hopefully, you know, what we're going to need from Washington is not a solution to these problems. There are no solutions. You know, there's nothing that Ron Paul can do as president to stop this economic collapse from coming. What we need out of Washington is a government that gets out of the way and lets the free market gradually rebuild a viable economy. We've got to start producing again. We've got to start saving again. And we can't do that with a bloated federal government taxing and regulating us to death. We need to shrink the size of government. We need to, you know, we need to stop, you know, the foreign policy that we have, this aggressive foreign policy that we can't afford. We can't have our troops all over the world. We can't afford it. And even the fact that we're probably doing more harm than good is probably a benefit. Also, we can't afford these lavish social welfare programs and these entitlement programs. We're bankrupt. We've got to stop that. We've got to, you know, repeal the income tax. We've got to restore an incentive to work and produce in this country. Because we're going to need that. We have dug ourselves into such a deep hole that we're never going to get out of it with this bloated federal government. We need a government that's going to minimize the burden on the free market so that we can gradually restore this country. But believe me, there's a lot to restore. There's a lot of work.
Well, certainly much of what you said closely echoes what Dr. Paul says in his statements on monetary policy, on economics, and on the size of government. Now, we mentioned the electability of Congressman Paul. Give us your impressions on November 5th, the fundraising drive in which supporters for Ron Paul raised $4.2 million in a single day.
Yeah, you know, I think that's good, and I'm trying to help out. You know, you may or may not know, I sent out an email yesterday to my database encouraging people to make contributions to Ron Paul. I made a contribution myself, and I thought that other clients of mine, if they knew about Ron Paul, would be willing to make contributions, and, so far, I've generally had positive, feedback from that, from my database, but I've had, a few clients, mostly just database subscribers who have been, asked to be removed from the database because I sent out a political message. There are some people support other candidates, either Republicans or Democrats. I don't know if any of my clients are going to, decide to close their account and transfer out because of my politics. I mean, it would be unfortunate because I've made a lot of money for my clients, and they're likely not to achieve that success with another broker. So hopefully if they, they support another candidate, they'll be willing to look the other way and continue to work with me. But if it means I lose a few clients because I tried to get the word out to help Congressman Paul, I've got enough clients. I can lose a few. It's not going to bother me. But we'll see what happens. Hopefully the base will be able to give Ron Paul a few million dollars, maybe $5 or $10 million. I have no idea. I mean, I don't know how effective it's going to be. Not all the emails go through. I emailed out about 60,000 emails. About 40,000 of them get through. Out of that, maybe about half to a third of them will actually get open. So, whenever you do an email, you don't necessarily get full penetration to your database. It's, a lot of the stuff ends up in spam filters. It's really difficult. So who knows how many will get through, and then, how many people will act. But I did find that a lot of the people who I emailed had already donated to Ron Paul. Some donated, the last couple of days, or had donated in the past. So there are a lot of Ron Paul fans, in my database. But, I think that the biggest problem Ron Paul has right now is that people don't think that he's electable, and so they don't want to support somebody who they don't think can win. And I actually disagree. I mean, I'm not, naive enough to think that it's easy for Ron Paul to win. But I do think that as long as there's a crowded field of other Republicans, as long as there's three or four front runners that can divvy up the vote, Ron Paul could win primaries in that type of environment. I don't think Ron Paul could win one-on-one with one of the front runners. But if you have three solid front runners divvying up the establishment vote, if Ron Paul is out there with an aggressive campaign and ads and money, he might be able to win some primaries when he has three or four opponents that are, that are divvying up the rest of the non-Ron Paul vote. And that could be enough for people to take him seriously, for him to get even more money, to get more media attention, and maybe have a decent run for this nomination. It doesn't mean that he's a shoo-in, but he's not a key, I think he's got a better chance of winning than any of the other third-tier candidates.
Well, that's certainly what I think many of us are seeing here who are activists for Ron Paul. Primary elections are very low voter turnout events, and a motivated, organized force, which I think that the Ron Paul Revolution certainly qualifies as a motivated and organized force, can certainly pull stunning upsets in the primaries because of that.
What would be great is if Ron Paul can stay in this thing till the end, if he gets enough money, even if a few other candidates drop out, if he's still in it, the media is going to have to cover him. And he can stay in this thing, and we can get the message heard, and if he can get to the convention with a decent number of delegates, who knows? I mean, I think that by the time the nomination comes, if this economy is in such lousy shape that it's obvious that the nominee can't beat the Democrat, maybe we can get some of the electorate to finally exercise their own discretion and nominate Ron Paul regardless of who has more electors. Because those electors that come to the conventions are free. They can vote wherever they want. They don't have to vote for who they were sent there to vote for.
Well,
and, this is an important time in our country. We are going to go through a period of economic hardship unlike nothing we have ever experienced. And, these are the conditions where, nations can make pivotal turns, either, for the good or for the bad. And, it's important that we have a message of freedom and liberty so that people know that these problems that we're about to go through are not the result of too little government, but too much government. And, there's going to be a big cry from the left that these are the problems of unfettered capitalism, that we need more government to insulate the people from the evils of capitalism, of too much greed and too much, Yeah, and we need a different voice to really put the blame where the blame is due on big government, on central banking, on government interference and mismanagement of our money, and on too much government, not too little government.
Well, I think that the argument certainly can be made that we're witnessing a paradigm shift politically in this country right now, and certainly the leading edge of that is Ron Paul, his campaign, and what has come to be known as the Ron Paul Revolution, which is an actual, real, live, legitimate, popular political movement in this country. Many commentators within and around this movement have come to the conclusion that the face of American politics has already been transformed irrevocably and forever. And certainly the factor of the internet is coming into play, the democratization of the political process via...
Yeah, the internet is great at getting the word out, and I know there's a lot of Ron on the internet. I know, that's a great thing. I'm one of the few people out there, and Ron Paul, understands the macroeconomic picture. I mean, the reason that I was able to do so well for my clients over the past, 8-10 years is because I understood the problems of our economy. The reason I was, what led me to get all my clients to invest their money abroad, to get rid of their dollars and to buy stocks in Asia and Europe and to buy gold and to buy commodities and to buy oil and agricultural commodities and everything I've done that has worked out so well for me and for my clients over the years is based on my understanding of economics and my understanding of the fundamental flaw in our current economy. And Ron Paul understands these same problems. He's been saying a lot of the same things on Capitol Hill, and some of these Senate hearings that I've been saying on the radio, that I've been saying on television, that I spent 2 hours on Fox News today trying to pound sense into the other members of the panel there what was going on. But, the vast majority of people are completely clueless, just like all the other presidential candidates in the race, Democrats and Republicans, have absolutely no clue what's happening around the world, what's happening to the value of our dollar, what's happening to America's status. Confidence is being lost in our currency. I mean, that's basically all we have. There's no gold backing the dollar, and we don't have an export economy where people want dollars to buy our products. The only reason people were willing to accept dollars was because they had confidence in its future purchasing power, they had confidence in the Fed, and you know what? That confidence is dwindling every day as the government sits by and watches the currency implode, and they're doing nothing. The Fed should be aggressively raising interest rates, but they won't do it because they don't want to bring on the recession. We need this recession. We need it badly.
Well, let's talk about that. I believe today China made some sort of an announcement with regards to its foreign reserves that served as a proximate cause for today's mini crash in the dollar. But the two previous days, the three previous days, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday of last week, there certainly began a nearly vertical plunge in the value of the dollar lasting through today, a somewhat of a mini crash. If you look at a chart of the dollar, it looks like a waterfall, and right now we're at the steepest, almost vertical drop in the dollar. It does appear that we're witnessing something of an actual crash in the value of the dollar, yet it's not in the news.
I don't think we've seen the crash yet, and maybe there'll be another rally before the ultimate crash. I don't know. I mean, the dollar could certainly snap back, but the catalyst last night was, yes, an official in China talked about the need to diversify their $1.4 billion in foreign reserves out of dollars. And, they've talked about that before, but the bottom line is eventually they're going to do that. And, our phony economy, our consumer debt-driven economy is based on the rest of the world, principally China, being willing to loan us a lot of money at low interest rates so that we can buy the products that they produce. We don't have any real domestic savings. The only reason that you can borrow money to buy a house is because China or Japan, they're willing to buy the mortgage-backed securities. They're the ones that have the savings. And the reason you can use your credit card when you go to Walmart is because somebody in Japan or somebody in Saudi Arabia is lending you the money. And the reason that the product is even on the shelves in the first place is because the people who produced it in China were willing to send it over here in exchange for our dollars. But if our dollars, people are not going to It's happening. It's beginning to happen. And there is going to be a real crisis because we are going to be forced abruptly to live within our means again. And it's going to be very difficult for a nation who's been totally dependent on really the charity of the rest of the world to live. You know, we've got a service sector economy that can't survive unless the rest of the world makes their manufactured goods available to us because we don't make them ourselves. And if we're just borrowing, that doesn't work if somebody else isn't willing to lend. So we're going to have to change the fabric of our economy. We're going to have to go back to what we used to be. But it's not an easy road to travel.
Well, I'm curious to know why an event so dramatic as the plunge of the dollar and the rally of gold to an all-time high is not in the financial news media. It's virtually being ignored except for today, really, when it came out a bit.
They mention it casually, but then they try to dismiss the significance. They try to say that gold is going up because of jewelry demand, because everybody is so wealthy. It's a sign of our prosperity. Oil, you know, they find ways to rationalize these things. They keep saying there's no inflation. They say inflation is the lowest in history. What are you talking about? I tell people, this is terrible. Why do you think oil is as high as it is? Why do you think gold is as high as it is? Inflation is causing this to happen. But they say no. All the evidence shows that inflation is contained. But the only evidence they can point to is the numbers that the government creates. That's what's phony. It's the government CPI numbers that claim there's no inflation that are phony. Gold and oil are reality. And you can see the prices when you go to the supermarket. You can see what food costs. You can see what milk costs or eggs or bread or cheese or meat or cereal or pasta or rice. You can see prices rising. People can see the cost of education rising. They can see the cost of health insurance rising, of other sorts of property and casualty insurance. Prices are going up across the board because of all this inflation, yet Wall Street and the government are trying to convince us that there's no inflation simply because their own numbers tell us that there's no inflation.
Well,
but these numbers are lies. These numbers, you know, the CPI was re-engineered in the late 1990s. They totally changed it. This is not your father's CPI. It's not the CPI we used in the 70s and 80s. It's a brand new CPI where the government can make up the numbers. The basket changes every month. The government determines what's included each month and what's not included. They adjust prices using hedonic adjustments. They use geometric pricing. They use substitution. There's all kinds of ways they can massage these numbers now to get any result they want. And, you know, and that's the reality. And so you can't look at these government numbers. You have to look at market indicators of inflation, which are the money supply growth and which are the results of that, which are sky-high oil prices, sky-high gold prices, and a sinking dollar. You know, the Canadian dollar hit $1.10 today. $1.10. When I started buying Canadian dollars for my clients, you know, 7-8 years ago, we were buying them for 65 cents. So the Canadian dollar went from being worth 65% of a dollar to be worth 110% of a dollar. You know, and I think about 5 years ago, the average American earned 70% more than the average Canadian. Now the Canadians have caught up. They earn as much as we do. That is a dramatic loss of purchasing power for Americans, for our neighbors in the north. And I think by next year, the average Canadian will earn 20-30% more than the average American, and in 2 or 3 years, the average Canadian could earn twice as much as the average American. That is a massive failure. In fact, I think in the next 2 or 3 years, the average Greek citizen, the average citizen in Portugal will earn more money than the average American. I mean, and these are not the top-tier countries. These are countries where we were earning three times what they were earning, and they're going to be earning more than us.
Well, let's talk about the Federal Reserve. Now, frequently in the establishment media, they do throw around the buzzword, the credit crunch, without defining that in any way. There does seem to be a buzzword out there about the credit crunch, and that needs to be alleviated by the Federal Reserve by lowering interest rates and creating liquidity.
You know, because what happened is people lent us a lot of money, and now they're realizing that we can't pay it back. So the crunch is people don't want to lend us money anymore. I mean, they should have never lent us all this money in the first place. But when you can't pay back your loans, your bankers don't want to lend you any more money. And that's the credit crunch. The world that has been doing all the lending, that has been buying all these mortgage-backed securities, buying all these securitized subprime loans that they thought were AAA rated, but now they realize they're junk. Right, the people who have been lending all this money don't want to do it anymore. That's the credit crunch, you know. And there's nothing the government can do to alleviate it. It's just going to get worse. And as you know, as our real estate prices continue to fall, as Americans get further behind on their payments, as they have these huge balances on their credit cards that they can't handle, it's just going to get worse and worse. You know, I mentioned it today on Fox and last week that there is a ticking time bomb in securitized credit card debt. That is the next subprime. You know, people who are holding debts backed by credit card receivables, Americans can't pay. American consumers have leveraged themselves up to their eyeballs, and they can't afford to service this debt. And as these adjustable mortgage payments start to reset, that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, because the typical American with an arm cannot afford the payments that are about to hit.
Are we looking at the possibility? Now, I know that I saw some news reports maybe about a month or so ago about China and Japan and Saudi Arabia, especially China, actually selling U.S. treasuries instead of buying them. In other words, net on that particular reporting month, it was net negative on the flow of money into U.S. treasuries, out of U.S. treasuries. Now, that's a symptom of precisely the credit crunch that you're referring to, is it not? And is that something that we're seeing potentially reach a crisis point at this point if the dollar is plunging and foreign holders of U.S. dollar-denominated assets could go into a panic and start to sell U.S. treasuries en masse?
It's a rational decision to get assets. Look, what we're doing is we're asking the world to lend us money, right? We need to borrow about $3 billion a day from the rest of the world, right? But we want to borrow in our own currency. We want to borrow in dollars. So what we're doing is we're going to the savers in other countries, in Europe and Asia, and saying, take your euros, take your, you know, Australian dollars, take your, you know, Canadian dollars, and convert them to U.S. dollars and loan them to us, and we will pay you an interest rate of 4.5% or 5%. Now, why would somebody want to do that when the dollar itself is losing 10% or more of its value every year? We're basically asking people to deliberately throw away their money, when the alternative is don't loan money to Americans, just keep our money in our own currency where we can get a higher rate of interest and not lose on the foreign exchange. So there is no incentive for the world to loan us money when we're asking them to basically, you know, sacrifice themselves. Basically, we're trying to say, look, you need American consumption so much that you, the rest of the world, should be willing to lose money every year just to subsidize American consumers. And I think the world is going to start to realize that that is a lousy deal for them.
Now, Mr. Schiff, for those of our listeners and viewers who probably are not very well versed in these matters, describe the consequences of this to them. For example, if they're not buying our debt anymore, are we going to be able to pay for the war in Iraq and the war with Iran? Are we going to be able to continue to pay for the entitlements? Do we run into a situation where suddenly there's no more money for the government to function
in
this way?
Anything, because, you know, if we can't borrow the money from abroad, who are we going to borrow it from? I mean, we have a negative savings rate. So the only alternative would be for the government to raise taxes massively, which they're not going to be able to do, or the Federal Reserve just prints money. But, of course, that money is not going to have any value after they finish printing it. So the answer to your question is, without the rest of the world loaning us money, our government can't afford to do a lot of the things that it's doing. In fact, it can't afford to do them right now. That's why we're borrowing all this money, because we can't afford it. But, you know, we're digging ourselves into a much deeper hole, because theoretically, you know, we have to pay all this money back plus interest. So if we can't afford it now, we're really in trouble with all this extra debt. People always forget about the fact that we got to pay this money back and we got to pay interest.
Absolutely. Well, I think that, I have been saying on my show when I analyze these matters that we know this is going to happen. The crash that you're describing. Dr. Paul has been talking about it. You've been talking about it. Others have been talking about this for years. We've all known that it's been coming. The only question is when. Well, it appears to be now. And my point on this is that better now than later, because if it happens now, it may very well be the catalyst that can catapult Ron Paul into the White House.
Well, what's the reason why we want it? Look, the sooner this happens, the better, because the longer it goes on, the worse the problems become. And the bigger the risk is that we're never going to fix these problems. You know, it's like if you're a heroin addict and you really want to get healthy, you need to stop taking the heroin, which means, you're going to go through withdrawal. No, but the politicians don't want the economy to go through withdrawal. We're addicted to debt and consumer spending. We have to stop doing that. We can't stop doing that without having a recession. But politicians don't like to run for re-election during a recession. But the problem is, you know, like a heroin addict, if you keep taking the heroin because you don't want to go through withdrawal, you run the risk of overdose and you die. And the overdose into our addiction is hyperinflation. That the Fed takes this so long that we end up completely destroying the value of our money, where you know where you need wheelbarrows to buy something at the discount store. So you know that's the real risk we run. I do not think we're going to go to hyperinflation. I think at some point the Fed will ultimately do the right thing and administer the medicine that is long overdue. But unfortunately, they've waited so long that this is going to be an unprecedented disaster, even if they do the right thing. And if they do the wrong thing, then it's going to be even worse.
So
that will be hyperinflation, and we do not want to live through that.
So let's talk about the Federal Reserve. Let's talk about constitutional money, hard money, asset-backed money, and let's talk about Dr. Paul's prescription for actually just eliminating the Federal Reserve and getting back to some form of hard money. Is that the prescription?
I agree that we need to abolish the Fed. The Fed has been an abysmal failure ever since it was created in 1913. You know, we had no inflation in this country for the 140 years before the Fed came around. You know, a man could have gone into the store in 1790, and the same man could have, you know, gone on the time machine and got into a store in 1913, and he would have known. He would have known what things cost. The prices stayed the same. It was only with the Fed and their propensity to create perpetual inflation that the dollar lost better than 95% of its purchasing power.
Okay.
So we should abolish the Federal Reserve. But we don't want to transfer those powers to the federal government. We don't want the federal government printing money either. They might do an even worse job than the Fed. I mean, at least the Fed has the pretense of being independent. We don't want Congress printing money either. We want to go back to the original intent of the Founding Fathers. We want to go back to real money. We want to, you know, follow the Constitution, which basically established money in this country as gold and silver coins. We want to go back to a real gold standard. We want gold to be money. That doesn't mean that we have to walk around with gold bars and gold coins. We can still have notes that are fully redeemable in gold, and they don't have to be issued by a government entity. They can be issued by a private bank. And if the government is going to circulate money, then the government can take gold and coin it and put it into circulation.
And Congressman Paul's been talking about a parallel currency of some sort. Congressman Paul's been talking about a parallel currency that would compete with the dollar and eventually allow us to phase out the dollar.
We already have tons of parallel currencies competing with the dollar. That's you know, the euro and the Swiss franc and the Canadian dollar, and they're beating the dollar every day. And, of course, individual citizens on their own can choose not to save dollars. I mean, my clients aren't saving dollars, and people can choose to keep their savings in gold. I mean, the government, at least right now, is not forcing us to keep our money to keep our savings in dollars. And ultimately, what's going to happen if we don't do something is there's going to be, you know, there's going to be black marks in the United States. I mean, there's going to be, if you're going to want to get anything really good, you know, you're going to have to pay for it in a currency that's not the dollar. Because if it goes into a free fall, people are not going to want it. The government's going to have to make it illegal to trade in other currencies, and then they will have black markets, just like in other countries that have done this.
Well, it certainly looks like we are at that point in time in the historical curve where the rubber meets the road and where all the predictions that have really been going on for quite a long time. I mean, you can go back to the 70s and read predictions of just what we're talking about today happening then at that time because of, you know, the fiat money system, the Fed, and all of this. And they've been able to string it out for far longer than many, many pundits would have ever believed. They continually reinflate the bubble.
That people, you know, my opponents have been able to try to criticize me is they say, well, Peter Schiff has been talking about this economic gloom and doom for years, yet he's been wrong because the economy is so great. Now, that ignores the fact that I haven't been wrong because my investment advice has been dead on accurate, and what's wrong are the statistics. All they do is they point to these GDP statistics and they say we have this great economy, but they don't understand that the GDP statistics are artificially inflated due to phony numbers, and they ignore the massive debt that this economy has taken on in order to produce that GDP growth. That GDP growth is illegitimate. It's been financed with borrowed money, and it's only come at the expense of a collapse in our future GDP when the bills come due.
Sure, you can go.
Now we're seeing these Wall Street firms, you know, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch, some of these big investment banks, Citicorp. You know, they reported huge profits over the last few years, and now they're writing them all down. They're reporting enormous losses because those profits came at the expense of tremendous debt that they were accumulating. Because you know, the profits were phony, just like the dot-coms. You know, so our economy has been phony. It's been like America.com. You know, we're like a giant subprime mortgage, and you know, ultimately, and I think right now we're going to see. How phony this prosperity was, because it's all going to come collapsing around us.
There doesn't appear to be another engine for a new bubble to replace this latest housing market bubble.
No, the Fed is out of the bubble blowing. The money that they're printing now is not blowing up any assets, although there are a few. You can look at stocks like Apple and Google, and you know, there are some mini bubbles going on there. But most of the bubbles that are being created now, if they are being created, maybe in some of the Chinese names, but the money the Fed is creating is leaving this country. It is going into foreign currencies. It is going into commodities. It is going into oil. It is going into gold. And all the money the Fed prints, that's where it's going to go. It's not going to go into an asset that Americans can leverage. It's going to go into real things and real stuff.
How high can the price of gold go? Can we look at $2,000 gold by the end of next year?
Well, you know, there's no limit to how high the price of gold can go in terms of dollars, because there's no limit to how low the dollar can fall. You know, the dollar can fall in perpetuity, and the gold price can continue to rise. I mean, I think if you want to look at gold and you want to put it in relationship to the Dow Jones, today the Dow Jones is worth about 16 ounces of gold. That still represents a relative expensive price for the Dow historically. The Dow was at 20 ounces of gold in 1929. And it fell to 1 ounce of gold in 1932. It was clearly cheap in 1932. The Dow went to 20 ounces of gold again. I mean, 20 ounces of gold again in 1966. The Dow was very expensive in 1966, and then it fell all the way back down to 1 ounce of gold in 1980, when it was a very good buy. The Dow got all the way back up to an all-time high of 42 ounces of gold in 2000, unprecedented, twice the peak of 1929 and 1932. I mean, 1929, 1966. Right now, the Dow is at 16 ounces of gold. It's down 62% in the last 8 years. It's down 20% year-to-date. But I still think the Dow has a good shot of returning to the 1-to-1 label with an ounce of gold, which I think would mark the bottom in stocks and the peak in gold. And so, you know, where would that be? That can come with the Dow at 5,000 and gold at 5,000. It can come with the Dow at 10,000 and gold at 10,000. It doesn't really matter where the two are, just so long as we get the ratio back of 1-to-1. And so I think there's the potential for that to happen again. And so that means that assets lose a lot of value, you know, relative to gold.
Well, Mr. Schiff, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show and educating our viewers and listeners about these vital, important, and highly topical matters. I also want to thank you very much for your support for Congressman Ron Paul for president. I wanted to let you know that there's another opportunity to help Ron Paul get elected on December 16th. That is the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. And just as we did on November 5th, this time around a much better theme, I might add, the Boston Tea Party, there will be another fundraising, one-day fundraising blitz for Ron Paul. So perhaps you'd like to help us throw a few of those taxed bales of tea overboard into the water and raise more than the $4.2 million on December 16th. By recontacting your subscribers on or around that date.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'll see what happens, you know, as a result of this email, to see if I'm going to, send out another blast of that nature. But I certainly will do what I can to help the congressman. I'd be willing to campaign for him, when it, nearing New Hampshire or something, if I can help get some turnout. I think what a lot of people should do if they really support Ron Paul is they should get a copy of my book, buy a few copies of my book, and give it to people to read. Because when people read my book and they really understand the mess this country is in, those people are going to be more inclined to want to vote for Ron Paul. I mean, it really presents a compelling argument and really, you know, explains the mess this country is in, how we got into this mess, and what we're going to need to get out of it. And if you read that book, I mean, you should come to the conclusion that Ron Paul is the guy you got to vote for.
Absolutely. That book, again, for our listeners and viewers, is Crash Proof: How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse by Peter D. Schiff. And you can, of course, get it on Amazon.com or at your local bookseller. Peter, why don't you go ahead and tell people your website?
Sure. My website is www.europac.net, europac.net. And, you know, I do a live weekly radio show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So it's 1.5 hour from now. So if you want to continue to listen to me talking for another hour to my clients on my own show, you can listen to that on my website live. We stream it, or you can also listen to it on shortwave radio. The frequency is on my website. You can read my economic commentaries going back 3 or 4 years. You can see how accurate I've been. You can all my live radio shows are archived on my site. Nothing has been edited. You can see everything I've been saying, and there's probably at least 100 or more broadcasts of me on that site, on CNBC, on Fox, on CNN, on Bloomberg. You can see the things that I've said. You can see how accurate each and every one of my predictions have been about every market in which I have forecast. And so I have a very good track record of having understood these problems. And so it puts in the proper context what I'm still saying. The things that I'm still saying are going to happen. There should be a lot more credibility now, because you can look back and see how many things I've already gotten right.
Very good. Well, thank you so very much. And folks, if you want to protect the value of your wealth or grow it, I recommend that you contact Peter Schiff at europac.net and give some consideration to putting your trust in his financial expertise. Thanks again for joining us, Mr. Schiff, on the Freedom Message. I hope it won't be the last time.
All right, well, thanks for having me, and sure, I'll be back again.
Great.
Anytime you call.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
So there we had Mr. Peter Schiff of Euro Pacific Capital, author of Crash Proof. That, I think, was a very important interview, and it was my pleasure to bring it to you. I hope that it helps you understand the complexities of the financial economic situation that we find ourselves in and the urgency of the moment historically where we really, really are right now. And the importance of electing Ron Paul for president and taking action today, right now, as soon as possible. So for our BBESradio.com listeners, they're going to go ahead and take you to your next program right now. If you'd like to stay with the show, go ahead and continue to tune into RonPaulFreedomMessage.com, RonPaulFreedomMessage.com, and you can watch the show on that webpage. You do need to have Flash Player installed on your web browser. So if you don't, go to flash.com, install that, and watch the rest of the show. We're going to recap the rest of the news, the new news from the establishment media on the Ron Paul November 5th fundraising effort, in which Ron Paul raised $4.3 million in a single day. Now, it was like almost like a switch was thrown. Yesterday, the switch was on negative, and virtually every single piece of news that was out there, whether it was electronic media or whether print media, was horrifically negative on the event. Primarily because of the link to Guy Fawkes and V and the terrorism theme. So that seems to have changed today. There are very few references to Guy Fawkes and V and terrorism and any of that. And the overall tone of the reports is much more upbeat, positive, and open-minded. And we're going to start with the very best piece, a piece from the Cafferty file. Now, Jack Cafferty, he has been quite a gentleman with Dr. Paul, and he continues to be so. So we're going to go ahead and watch what we've got here. Actually, let's do this first. Let's go to a piece from CNN with Wolf Blitzer, which is going to lead into the Jack Cafferty piece. So let's play that first.
Make, and we now owe them billions of dollars because we had a consumption binge. We bought